Conference record has joined the conference.
Hey, Melvin, still on the line?
I'm here, yeah.
All right, awesome. Give a little introduction for our readers. This is Dylan Muhlberg of Grateful Web here with organ maestro, vocalist, and band leader Melvin Fields. Yes, sir. Since 1981, Fields sat behind the organ, piano, and synthesizer for Jerry Garcia Band. His gospel, soul, and blues influences were pivotal to the evolution of the Garcia Band sound. And all the more remarkable, since the untimely passing of Garcia in 95, Fields assembled a talented lineup of musicians to continually play the music of Jerry Garcia. Many gifted players have participated, but Fields is the sole continuous member. Thanks for joining me this afternoon, Melvin.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate this.
Oh, of course. And Grateful Web, we're all huge fans of your music and what you've been doing. Your father was a musician and choir director, if I recall correctly. How did growing up surrounded by this spiritual music shape your development as a musician?
Well, like I said, he was the choir director and one of the pianists at the church. And, you know, I as a young boy, I think it started striking me about the age of six or seven in that area somewhere. I started, you know, of course there was a piano in the house, and I just started sitting down at it, just trying to see what it was all about. Didn't know anything, you know. And I used to listen to the pianist. There were other pianists at the church that were very good, and just watch them play and listen to the music. And it just hit me that, man, this is great. This, you know, this is what I want to do. And so I started on the piano, you know. I don't think I was very good, but, you know, to start and you're not going to be very good. And then one day I noticed the organ. Even though it was always there, it just hit me one Sunday that, wow, listen to this organ, you know. And I said, that's what I wanted to do, is play organ. And so I started switching from the piano immediately over to the organ. And that's how it's begun.
And that was the beginning, but in between then and your tenure with Garcia, there was a lot of other, not necessarily performing in a live band. As I recall, you composed for some Broadway plays, didn't you?
Yeah, I worked on, there were a bunch of, you know, in school, Broadway house band, where you rehearse forever, maybe do one gig, you know. I did a few of that, but I quickly got into some bands that did have some agency that had a name back then that was able to travel. It was a peculiar style. One band was called Gideon and Power. And you may not have ever heard of it, but in that band was Mickey Thomas, who went on to be with Elvin Bishop. He sang that song, Flew Around and Fell in Love. And he went on to be with Justice of Starship. He was in the band at the same time I was. And the manager at that band at that time was Wally Amos. This is before Wally became famous with Famous Amos Cookie.
Aha. Uh-huh.
He was Wally Amos, and he was a manager way back then. And so they had a little bit of history that no one probably would never put in the act together, but that was the very, very first professional gig where I actually took a flight, flew to Phoenix, did a gig, and got paid, you know, the first. And then quickly behind that came Broadway plays with John Hendricks of Evolution of the Blues. John Hendricks was the leader of Landrick, Hendricks, and Ross, the vocal groups. You may have heard of them. Not they were big in back some time ago. And I was in his Broadway play, Evolution of the Blues, for about 6 years in San Francisco. And did three other kind of hit Broadway plays. And then from that, moved into Elvin Bishop, got into his band with the hit Flew Around and Fell in Love. I was doing that whole period of time and riding that horse kind of high. And from Elvin, which I sat in with Dick Gidge and Maria Mordauer, Buddy Miles, and sat in with a bunch of other bands on stage. Didn't play with them, but Charlie Daniel, Marsha Tucker, you know, they would leave the organ on stage and I'd sit in and do a song or two with them. And then it just kind of led into the Jerry Garcia Band, where I've been ever since.
Yeah, it sounds like you were playing with a lot of those cats in the 70s. And Merle Saunders was a good friend and frequent musical collaborator of Jerry Garcia. And if I recall, he acquainted you two. Can you talk about meeting Jerry Garcia and how he played at the time and how you played at the time?
Well, that's a really long story how I met him, but I could tell you one story that was really amazing to me and amusing to me. First, Merle Saunders and I were very good friends. And I used to talk to Merle. We would talk on the phone. He was playing with these guys with the Garcia Band. I'm playing with Elvis Bishop. We would talk on the phone about experience and how we felt on the road and stuff like that. And I didn't know who Garcia was. I just only knew the name Grateful Dead. Because living in San Francisco, you know, there's always talk about Grateful Dead, Mickey Hart's birthday today, Grateful Dead, or New Year's, they're performing around the Coliseum and the trafficking and all the stuff that goes. He just knew the name, but I didn't know the members or any of them. And so Merle would talk about it. I didn't know it was Garcia. He knew I was with Elvin Bishop, and we'd talk about stuff. So anyhow, I started doing some work with Maria Moldauer, the lady that did Midnight at the Oasis. And I was performing a lot with her. Her boyfriend at the time was John Koss.
Yeah.
Longtime bass player and friend of Jerry Garcia. And so every now and then, Maria needed a bass player, and John would sit in. If someone didn't show up or someone couldn't make it, John would sit in. And that's where I met John. He was paying attention to who I was and the little sound that I was making on the keyboard at that time. And so he played with her quite a few times, and then one day he just popped a question about me coming and sitting there with another band from time to time, which it was the Garcia Band, but I didn't know. I knew nothing about it. He didn't go into detail to try to tell me anything. And so one day I got this call from John and said, hey, we got some gigs coming up. Would you like to do them? And can you make a rehearsal? And, yeah, of course, everything was yes, because you always want to meet new people and go new places. And so he just told me where to be at what time, which was Front Street, where the Grateful Dead office was. Now, the thing that was a little different here for me here, I didn't know the Grateful Dead, just knew the name. I didn't know much about their logos or their art deal, because I just knew I wasn't a deadhead. I was still kind of fresh out of the church. I was producing a lot of gospel records. I had a gospel record company. And so I was still really church-bound with a lot of stuff that I was doing. And so, I get to this rehearsal hall, and the night manager, who I think kind of stayed there, let me in. I was one of the first person there because I wanted to make a good impression. And so then in come all about six or seven, eight guys at one time. You know, Steve Parrish, Jerry, John, Greg Errico was on drums at the time, which I didn't know any of them. But let me go back. When I walked into the warehouse, I really got a little paranoid because all the logos and symbols were some form of a skeleton. you know, a skeleton with a violin in his hand, skeleton with this and that, and I didn't know what was going on. And I'm fresh out of the church, you know, so you see skeletons and. You know, it just don't go together. It just don't go together quite, you know. And so I'm like, what in the hell is, you know, I'm looking around and it don't look really good, you know. Anyhow, in comes about five or six people. They all showed up at the same time. And you know how everybody introduced themselves and they came in. Hey, I'm John. I'm Jerry. I'm Jerry. Hey, I'm Greg. But it's some short-term memory. You don't really get it. You hear it, but you don't. You know,
yeah,
so I didn't even remember the name. And in there was Jerry Garcia, but I didn't know who he was, you know. So they quickly discovered I didn't have a clue what was going on. So this guy, Jerry, says, let's go play a song or two. And I went, you know, we played, I think, How Sweet It Is, and I think it might have been Harder to Come. And then we said, let's take a break. And they took a break, and they all disappeared in these different rooms. I don't know where they went and what they were doing. Then we all come back together in the little lobby area, and that's what I want. That's it. This is Jerry says this is. So I said to Jerry, which I didn't know it was Jerry. I said, "Hey man, you play some really good guitar," and they just busted up laughing. I don't know. I don't have a clue what's going on. Of course, he says, "Well, you play some pretty good organ yourself," you know, and had a laugh. But this is what I wanted to say. When I was playing with Elvin Bishop, we did a gig in San Diego, and the Jerry Garcia Band was the headliner. They never came out. I never saw Jerry. Didn't know who he was. But Merle was with him at that time, and I didn't even see Merle. We played and we left. But Jerry, when I met him and understood who he was, he recalled that evening we performed, and he asked some of his band members who was that on the organ. I don't know if anybody knew, but I thought that was so, it was just a boost of my ego for him to even pay attention, you know, what we were doing. He never came out the room, never saw him, but he heard me, and he told me that when I got with him, he said, "Oh, man, I heard you before, and I asked who you were," and he recalled that situation. Oh, my God, wow. You never know who's really listening to you, you know. Never thought, being Merle, being my best friend, that incident, that I would ever be playing with this guy. Not in a million years.
Well, clearly you made your impression, and I did not know about that story. That is quite an interesting story, and I guess testament to his character, and then your relationship, which budded from there, is a 14-year musical tenure with Garcia, and totally different worlds as far as influences, perhaps, but I mean the chemistry.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's the covers that he was doing was like, but it was so natural for you to be part of that.
Well, I didn't know that, you know, because they did not let me listen to anybody that played in the band before me. They had different versions of the Garcia Band, I guess, for quite some time. It was nothing really new. We were new, but, you know, he's had different players. And I guess I understand now, because had he played me some of the songs with Merle on it, I would have immediately went to play like Merle, figuring that if this is what the guy has been doing before me, this is what I need to do. But they did not want me to do that, and so they would not let me hear no other keyboard players. They just gave me some chord progressions, some charts. Here's the song, and learn the song. And I guess what I did, he seemed to like, because he never gave me direction. He never said to me that one time, "Don't play that there. Try something different." He never said that to me. So I'm assuming the little bit that I brought to the table was something that he actually liked and was looking for.
Clearly, and the music that you two played together as Jerry Garcia Band likely opened the fan base, the Deadheads, whomever, to a whole lot of diverse music that might not have entered their stratosphere. So that's also cool to think about. And of course, it's been many years since Garcia passed, and
yes,
you rekindled the JGB not only in his memory, but because was it because of the need to congregate and play for fans, or what exactly made you feel like it was worth bringing that feeling back?
Well, when Jerry died, about 6 months later, John Kahn gave us all a call and popped up and got it. He had one gig at the Palookaville, I think it was called Palookaville in Santa Cruz. And he said, "You guys want to go do a gig down there?" And we all, the surviving members with some new members, said yes. And he was going under the name of John Kahn Band. He was doing similar stuff that Jerry would have done, but he did stuff that Jerry did do. He kind of stayed out of some of the same material that Jerry would have done, but material that he would have done, but not necessarily he did. And so, when he got the first gig, it sold out so fast, they added the second night. So we did two nights at the Palookaville. And so the first night, you know, I'm listening to the fans, as they always have done with the Garcia Band, hollering out their favorite song, Stop That Train, Knocking on Heaven's Door, and John Conn Band didn't do any of those, you know. And so when I walked outside the first time, there were people in the little line out there saying, hey, Melvin, hey, Melvin, you guys going to play any Jerry tune tomorrow night? And I, you know, I said, this is not my band. This is, you know, it's not my band. But I heard the cry. Even without him being there and with the sorrow of the skill on the people's faces in their heart, they still wanted to hear those songs. And so the second night again, of course, we did not do Garcia material. We did songs that I could easily see him doing, but it was not the Garcia song. I don't think we did one, to be honest. And so we're getting ready to go on the road now as a John Conn Band. He had got an agency and got some dates, and within about 4 months, 4 or 5 months from that period of time, John died.
Yeah.
Yeah, he died, and then it's like that ended that. And I was the next longest person that was in the Garcia band other than John Conn. You know, all the other people were in there, the girls, and Dave Kemp was in there less than I was. The drummer wasn't even in there a good year. Now it was Don Baldwin at the time. And so that agency that was going to do work with John contacted me and told me the story and this and that, and wanted to know if we wanted to try and go out. And, yeah, you know, naturally, well, gosh, I talked to all the band members and they wanted to do it. And I thought we should call the band Tribute. I was pushing for calling it Tribute, a tribute to Jerry Garcia. But the agency at that time, no, just call it JGB. You know, just call it, that's who you guys are. And so we, before I dared do that, I had to check and make sure that name was not tied up by the estate or any of the other people on the other side that would challenge you. And when we looked in the book of records, it was really covered by a blind organization out of New York, Grimm. It was called JGB, and it meant something totally different. So I immediately filed for the initials, just so I wouldn't have any trouble with the fights that were going on, you know, with the state and all that. Make sure they couldn't come down on. And we went out as JGB. And I don't know how far you want me to tell the story, because it goes on and on and on and on.
No, I mean, I'm extremely interested, because I didn't know these details. I knew of Conn's untimely passing. I knew that there were gigs with him without Jerry, but it sounds like it just, as fate had it, it fell in. And was it continuous over the years from the late 90s that you were playing as the JGB?
Yeah, we started off as strictly just JGB, and we had a lot of trouble with that name. I guess people like Bill Graham, the Barsotis, and all the folks that were players, and all the major people that booked Jerry, had called a lot of our gigs JGB. It was not always called the Jerry Garcia Band. They used initial JGB, too. And so there was a lot of controversy. People feel like that. It just wasn't right, Melvin. We love you, and we love you, but, you know, we booked JGB. This is not JGB. And for a good 2 years, there was a lot of fight, and people not wanting to. So they wanted to support me. They didn't dislike me, but they just disliked what I was doing. You know, and you know how when a movie come out, and the movie critics. Tear it down, so they just talk about it. It's not worth going to see. Oh, it's horrible. It, in your worst day, you don't want to see something like that. Then it kind of makes you want to go, you want to see it to see what it was, so, just so you know. Well, some of the, as you would have it from the Grateful Dead camp, I think they got Dennis McNally to call a lot of their special fans and don't support us, and this is it, and try to pull some strings and this and that, and there were ads in the paper, there was stuff that I saw, and that's what happened from some of that camp, and I can't say who or where it came from, but some of that camp really just was down. Plus, you got to remember, I think they had met and decided they weren't going to work it, and so the way that it looked to everybody is it was over. I think I was one of the first ones that started working. and working under that name, and they didn't like it. And so a lot of the venues that would have probably bought that said, well, you guys not working anyhow, so what difference does it make? You're going to book them, you know. And so the controversy went on and on and on. They were trying to pull, some people were pulling strings not to book us, and it actually flipped. We got big really fast. We were selling out everywhere because folks wanted to come and see what was so bad, what was so good, whatever they were there for. There were people stood there and gave us a frown all night long with their arms folded, clearly making ugly faces. There were folks that was crying. They were so emotional. It was just a mixed crowd for the first couple of years, kind of breaking through that. And so after, you know, some of my friends and booking AD and people I knew that laughed in the dressing room with me with Jerry wouldn't book me, you know, I'm saying, well, gosh, you know. And it's only because they just felt like, this is not the Jerry Garcia band. You should call it something else, you know. But we had gone so far, then I said, okay, let me stick Melvin Seals out front. And just clearly, they're not trying to live on Jerry's thumb there, because it was a struggle. Not making one-third of the money we made with the Jerry Garcia band. It was a struggle. So I'm not clearly getting over. It's a struggle to even do it. But to try and tell, so I said, well, let's call it Melvin Seals and JGB. So maybe that would make them understand it's a different identity. It's now we're not trying to be the Bill Graham's JGB. And, you know, a couple of years went by, and a lot of that just started dropping, and everybody started loving us. And now it's a big, happy world. None of that exists anymore. You know, we're doing a lot of major shows and with some of the same promoters that wouldn't book us. It's like, it's just over with now. It doesn't exist. So I've stayed true to the music from the time Jerry died and John died, but I'm only doing what we did with the Garcia band. I'm not doing anything else.
Well, and it's so interesting because it was so new then, but look now. They're calling the Fare Thee Well celebration Grateful Dead. Dark Star Orchestra is huge also, and Stu Allen and John Cadlicic are stars. So it's just fast. And Dave Abair, I mean, all these guys are so talented, and it's so cool to see, I guess, how far it's come and the appreciation in retrospect. And the unit you guys got right now, Pete Lavazzoli, Shirley Starks, Cheryl Rucker, and Dave Abair, I mean, they have just, like you said, consistently selling out, and the folks keep making it out. So really just great to hear the history and know that background. There's lots of other activity going on outside of JGB. You've gigged with Shakedown Street, and now with more frequently with Terrapin Flyer and Mark Coran. So what's different about playing with Terrapin and Mark? Can we talk about that for a minute?
Well, it's very different. Mark has no desire to sound or play like Jerry, and he doesn't. And neither sing, even though he worked with Bob Weir all that time, I guess his position was totally different. He just doesn't carry any of that, you know, syndrome of sounding like Jerry, playing like Jerry, sounding in any form of fashion. The singer, Doug, has a young Jerry's voice. He sounds just like Jerry sounded when he was a lot younger at age. And he's all over that. So the Terrapin Flyer group played a combination of the Grateful Dead and Jerry Garcia band. They're a mixture of both bands. And that's one of the things. And it's just a funny thing that they just seem to be growing. Everywhere we play, they're picking up audience and they're growing. It's just a kind of hippie band that for no real reason, that it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And so I enjoy playing with them because Doug is very kind to me. And, you know, it's very open. You know, I just actually like playing with them. And they're one of the few bands that I continue to play with. I've kind of shut down a lot of others, but it's one of the few I still play with.
And I saw a show with y'all back, I think, in Denver a few years ago, or I'm forgetting where. But yeah, the chemistry's there, and it's just the playing's great, and it's inventive, and it goes places. So it probably continues to draw people in. But right now you're on tour with Flyer, but you also got some really exciting shows coming up with the JGB. Like, you guys are all gigging at the Warfield on the 20th, and John Kadlicek is sitting in with the core group. So, like, how do you think that's going to affect the performance? Have you guys played together with JK before?
Well, yes, we did that when the Dead had the Santa Clara show. Saturday and Sunday. We played that Friday night at the Warfield and sold out. So this is our second time going in the war. I guess this is why. The first time, it was booked with the Brotherhood, Chris Robinson and the Brotherhood. They were on the bill first. And then they added us, and that just took it to the max where it sold out. And I guess the Warfield people must have liked what we did, because they booked us now back as a solo artist. We're headlining the Warfield. And it's such an honor, because the Warfield don't do a lot of that kind of bands anymore. They kind of stopped doing a lot of jam bands and Grateful Dead. They started doing a lot of other styles of music. So for us to be back in there, which we used to call home with Jerry Garcia Band, is such an honor.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to this. This will be the second time, and now it's just us. We have the Dave Nelson Band opening up for us as a special guest, but it's just us. So if we do well and do the business, we may be able to call that home again.
You reminded me about that, about the Santa Clara gig. So that is so awesome that it's it is really triumphant for y'all. And I know how much the Warfield meant to Grateful Dead and to Jerry Garcia Band. So sincerely congratulations on that, especially your home turf for the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And so that's exciting, and that's a huge hometown or huge Bay Area gig for y'all. But there's also another I noticed in April at the Suwannee Festival. You're going to be joined by the Rolling Stones and Grey Boy All-Stars front saxman Carl Denson, who, I mean, he's gone leaps and bounds in his career because of his sheer talent and charisma. And historically, Garcia Band, you know, you guys all gigged with, like, Clarence Clemens back in the day.
That's right.
Yeah. Tell me about this this interesting intersection. Who approached who? How did this all manifest?
Well, you know, what started happening last year, working with Pete Shapiro, he seems to be a supporter of the law. He supports us and pushes us and has put us on some pretty big things. And kind of last year, we've done things with a little help of a special guest that always, like John coming in or someone else sitting in with us as our current configuration, and we've always had big success. So the Wani Festival wanted us, but they wanted us to have, you know, a boost, a special guest. I think it was their suggestion, if we could get Carl Denson, they would love to, you know, add him to, you know, join them with us for do. And our agency reached out, and he was available, and they made a deal, and we have Carl Denson. And so it's going to be the first time he's ever played with this band. I know he knows the material and styles and stuff, but we've never really played with that. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it makes me want to get out to Florida for that festival. I mean, what a collaboration. I have to say, that's pretty cool. I hope I get my hands on a recording. So just a question, kind of about like a music theory. Improvisation is kind of a spontaneous musical conversation in a way. Has playing in all these different lineups strengthened your improvisational prowess? How has that affected the way that you communicate on the spot?
It definitely opened me up to a lot more that I would have been doing, to play with different styles of music and different types of musicians that approaches things different, and yet be able to walk a straight line with them. has brought what I can do and how I look at things. So there's a lot of similarities now when I hear a song or hear some musicians with this style. I've done this before, and I go into that bag of tricks, and I become that guy, you know. Like a good example was Steve Kimmock. I did a good year working with him, and he likes to play off the beat type of stuff, and I hadn't done much of that at 4/4, the timing is 4/4, to 4/8 or whatever, but he likes off timing syncopation, and so that was a bit of a struggle when I first got with him trying to keep up with that because I didn't understand it. But, you know, quickly you learn it and you get into it. So now when I hear other songs that's got peculiar timing, oh, yeah, I got this now. I know where it's coming from. So those types of things happen when you play with a lot of different types of musicians. And I think it's just great.
I mean, I just thought about it because I've seen you in so many great collaborations that has to be like a growth experience as a musician. So I'm glad to hear that. And also speaking of which, it struck me that you definitely have to be a talented composer of your own, and you're involved with a really busy touring schedule. Do you ever find the time to record your own originals, even for your own purposes? Just curious.
Well, ironic you said that because this year I have two things that I'm trying to conquer, and I need to get started on one of them. One is I want to put out a Christmas record, family Christmas record with organ playing the carol, the Christmas carol. Because, you know, as I listen at Christmas time, I hear solo piano, a lot of guitar, a lot of saxophone, almost every instrument that the I hear their version of some great player playing Christmas carol. But when it comes to organ, it's always jazzed up. It's Jimmy Smith doing a jazz version of Silent Night or something. Not Silent Night, but whatever song that they can jazz it up. You know what I mean? I never heard someone playing the concert organ with strings around it playing a carol. And this is something I'm capable of doing. I don't know if it has any value, if it's going to have any value or not, but it's something I want to leave behind. And I'm committed this year to do a Christmas record of the Christmas carols the way they're written. I don't want to change them. I just want to make them pretty and feature the organ as a lead instrument. So that's one thing that I'm trying to get done this year. And the second, I want to do a funk record. When I was fighting the JGP, everybody kept saying, no, you ought to do your own band. You ought to do your own band. Do a funk record. Do a funk record. They were so ready for that. So I am going to get in the studio. I have two very nice, capable studios of my own. I just need the time to get in them.
Yeah.
And proceed on these two types of records.
Well, that's, I mean, yeah, two very distinctly different endeavors. That's super exciting news, Melvin. I'm glad I asked, and hope that you could, be open with media about that, because I know the fans would embrace it. I mean, they would love some originals and just as celebrated as that Jerry Garcia Band stuff, you know. So
yes, absolutely.
Yeah, cool. I figured I'd ask. And I hope you enjoy the rest of, I was just looking at your tour dates, the rest of this mini tour you guys are on in Portland, moving on to Eugene and Bend. And be sure to pass that along in the interview. And I encourage our fans to go out and support the JGB in various gigs that you guys got coming up. Definitely been a pleasure chatting with you. Appreciate your time.
I definitely like for them, if you can miss it, if you can just support, tell them I would love to see them all February 20th. The War for Show is so important to me. I'm going to pull out every stop that I know, and I'd like them to know that. So it's going to be a hell of a
show. Oh, for sure. Oh, hell yeah, man. Well, I will definitely, I mean, we're gonna highlight the Warfield show in this interview, and it sounds like a lot of the fans are really pumped for this also. I think it's going to be a great experience for the band and for the fans. So we'll definitely get that your way when the article's up, so you can take a look at that yeah, in the meanwhile, enjoy playing and see you in San Francisco in a week.
All right. Thank you very much, Dan.
Of course, Melvin. Take care. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.